Let's say good morning to Dr. Sean Nasseri. He's Harvard educated. He's a Mayo Clinic trained ENT. And we've got him this morning for about the next 10 minutes. Dr. Nasseri, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure to join you. Good morning.
Good morning. So let's talk about now more and more. You've got more and more communities recommending that people wear face masks. We were just talking with an ABC reporter about Laredo, Texas, mandating now that you wear a face mask. But every person, every health official who says wear this face mask also points out, but please don't take the N95 masks from the first responders. But then you've got a lot of people going, wait, but I don't know if these, you know, DIY face masks are going to keep me safe. Go over this for us so that we know what we're doing, why we're doing it, and the effectiveness of it, please.
All right. Well, thank you so much, first of all, for having me on. You know, we're all in this effort together. Yes. We're all working together in the best ways possible from, you know, the state and local level all the way across the country to see how we can mitigate this horrible pandemic, and we're going to get through it. And this is one of the ways that we're going to get through it, because you can think of it in very simple ways. Every time I sneeze, every time I cough, if I'm sick or if I'm in a room with someone who's sick, we create droplets. Those are big, you know, mucus droplets that come out when you cough or sneeze. And generally, the vast majority of them go 1 to 3 feet. A small proportion go 3 to 5 feet, which is why we have the 6-foot social distancing right now, but then tiny aerosols or tiny little particles that blow in the wind can stay in the air for specific viruses for up to an hour to even 3 hours in the laboratory. But in most real conditions, in any normal home, a normal office building, up to about usually 10, 20, 30 minutes, but those can go 10, 15, 20, even 30 feet. So the whole premise of masks is how can I prepare my body to repel an infection? Well, first of all, if there's an invasion of the country or there's an invasion, there are 1,000 people coming in versus 10 makes a huge difference if they're going to get across. Same way for the viruses. So if you have respiratory droplets and you get a large volume of it and you touch your mouth, nose, or eyes, those are your mucous membranes, the ones that are wet, you're much more likely to get an infection. So if you have a barrier of any good kind, but you don't touch your face after you touch a dirty doorknob or a door handle, a surface where someone has sneezed within the last hour or two, that's definitely going to provide you some level of protection. It's just simple physics. So the premise is that most people can't use, you know, the critical supplies that are in such short supply. And those are the N95 respirators. And also, they have to fit right.
So let's go over then what you can use. Because all over online, there are these, you know, here's how you DIY a mask with just things you've got at home. I know you've got places, fabric stores and whatever that are saying, hey, please make us essential. Because more and more people want to come in this week and they want to get the fabric just to make something to put over their faces. Is that then enough? Is this more of a social courtesy to each other that we're going to try and keep our droplets to ourselves?
Exactly, because that's actually a two-way protection. So I'll talk about fabrics in a sec, but basically, if you think about it, if I have a handkerchief over my face or if I have a paper towel or a towel over my face and I sneeze, the vast majority of droplets get caught on that item. So that's number one. I'm protecting everyone around me. It's a courtesy. It's like the person who doesn't cover their cough when they cough in a movie theater and everyone looks at them like thinking, wow, that's just not nice. I have children here.
Exactly.
That's always the question.
You are so much more courteous than I would. I'm thinking to myself, ew, you're gross. Go away. Go outside.
Right. That's rude or mean. Yeah. And you're in an airplane where you can't get away. And they sneeze next to you, you're like, oh my goodness. Like, again, you have children there, you have older folks there. So let's talk about fabrics. So these are very, very simple things because this is the United States of America. We're very, very good at innovating. You know, think back to Apollo 13. We're great at innovating what we have at home because most of us are stuck at home.
Yeah.
those of us who have to go to the office or have specific jobs, we have access to a little bit more. But in terms of home, you're going to look at very, very simple things. So I've spoken to a handful of different people who are doing this on a nearly medical grade, and you want to think of three things. Number one is, I want a fabric on the outside, because you ideally would like to have more than one layer. Like our surgery masks, there's an outer layer that's mostly water resistant.
Okay.
That catches most big particles. A middle layer that is basically a filtration or just filters. And then an inner layer that's soft, and that's almost always made out of cotton. So your outer layer could be a microfiber towel. It could be a kitchen towel. All these clean, washed, like, you know, not dirty. So kitchen towel, microfiber towel, sweatshirt material, even swimsuit material if you have old swimsuits running around. And there are lots of DIY, basically rectangular shapes you can make them. You can make them very complicated and make it a rectangle and then staple or sew on rubber bands for your ear loops. I'm just a direct one. And, you know, I've been around to a lot of medical places. What's most direct and simple is what people are going to be able to do.
Oh, yeah.
So if you make it a longer rectangle, but just cut a slit, like a hole for your ear, it's about 1.5 to 2 inches long on either side. At the ends of the rectangle, you can actually fit it over your ear and just get it over about, because most fabrics will stretch over your ear, and then you can adjust it to be comfortable for yourself, because, you know, I'm a 5'9", 200-pound man. My wife is 5 foot tall. Like, we're going to have a different size.
Sure.
So customize it to your own size, but measure it from about the middle of your nose, not your nostrils, but the middle of your nose, almost at your eyes, all the way down about 1.5 or 2 inches under your chin. So when you wrap it around, it hugs your nose around to your chin. Try to make at least one layer. If you can figure out how to do it, which most people will, do an outer layer that's more thick, hard, and absorbent, and then do an inner layer like a t-shirt material. So how do you make two layers? You just cut twice, and you just stack them on top of each other. It's like making a hamburger.
Yeah.
So you have the outer layer that, again, will be more water-resistant. Again, sweatshirt material, kitchen towel material, those thick, hard types of, you know, swimsuits, as long as they're not too much treated with chemicals. And then an inner layer, simple, simple t-shirt material. Not your expensive t-shirts. This is L.A. But everyone's got, you know, regular undershirts. My kids have, like, lots of undershirts laying around they've outgrown.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that inner layer, because it's got to be soft and breathable, so if you have it on your face for an hour or two to go to the grocery store, the doctor's office, to get gas, to get essential supplies, that you're covered. And that way, you're really going to protect yourself and the people around you.
Do you need to make a new mask every time you go out, or can you take that one and wash it and put it back on?
Again, the whole idea is reduce, reuse, recycle. So you're not going to do a new mask every time. You're going to take it out and you're going to judge. If I was in a room with absolutely nobody else and I came home, I'm going to throw it in the washer. And you can even just change the inside layer that was against your face, because all of us sweat. We have mucus. We have saliva. So I want to protect myself by washing the inside. If it's something where you went to the grocery store, and even though they're doing a great job at the places around L.A. to do social distancing, there's still, a thorough put of people walking around. So you want to see if you can just throw the whole thing in the washing machine. Try not to hand wash it if it's possible and available. So you get it. And I would make two or three, because I like to have one, use one, have one as your backup. Because as soon as you get somewhere, someone sneezes right next to you, you know, I'm not going to use that mask for very long. I'd like to take it off and wash it. It's just like in surgery. If I get something messy on me while I'm in surgery, I want to change that to a clean one as soon as I can.
Sure.
And you want to wash them.
Okay, so First of all, that is the best DIY on the air explanation I've ever had. So I don't know in the future, but I'm calling you again. I'm definitely keeping your number because that was awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. You honor me.
Secondly, I want to talk about people who go and they have symptoms of the coronavirus and they go and they get a test and it comes back negative. That still doesn't necessarily mean you don't have the coronavirus. And I think that false negative now is kind of resonating with people, and they're thinking more and more, man, how do I, even if I get some symptoms, should I just assume that I have it?
Exactly. Because In this environment, again, a test, it's like taking a math test on a Tuesday versus a Friday. They've done studies where we all test things differently in different circumstances. So if you look at the gold standard test, which is you come into a physician's office or one of the really great drive-by clinics that they've set up through the mayor's office and statewide, because you've qualified, and again, that's a very small number of tests, but they're doing a nasopharyngeal swab. They're going from the front of your nose all the way into what feels like your tonsils for 3.5 inches, getting a good swab of all the mucous material inside, immediately putting it in a transport media where it basically keeps viruses and bacteria alive for a few hours, quickly transporting it to the laboratory where it's going to get processed, and then process with the gold standard, the PCR machine that we all know from, you know, CSI. If someone has a drop of blood on a crime scene, we can identify them with 50 copies of their DNA. And for these viruses, we can identify them with as few as 50 copies of their DNA or RNA, like the coronavirus. So that's the gold standard, and that picks up about 95 to 98% of infections. So you have 100 infected people in a room, 95 to 98 of them will come up positive, and that's a fantastic test.
Yeah.
That's a gold standard test. All the other kits that are rolling out now and many of the FDA kits that are coming out from different private companies that are a variety of different techniques, they're not necessarily at the same exact level because it's just the technology. And the way I explain it is, you go to a fast food restaurant, you're going to have the best steak of your life. It's pretty unlikely because they're doing a large throughput.
Sure.
So what happens is the other technology is called enzyme immunoassay or EIA. And those tests where you are testing for components of the virus or are reactions to the virus, those tests, by definition of how the tests are put together and function, generally will miss 10 to 20% of infections. So again, if you have 10 people in a room, you're going to miss one or two who are positive. And that's a significant number because we're seeing family groups where five people are in a family sequestered together, three of them test positive, one doesn't get a test because they're basically healthy, and the fifth one tests negative, and you're like, well, that's weird. I would expect five people in the same room to have the same infection if they have cough, sneezing, shortness of breath, you know, that tightness in the chest you get when you get a bad bronchitis, and especially if you lose your smell and taste, because that's a little more specific to the coronavirus. Well, you're like, well, that's an interesting hunch.
So that explains then why we see these false negatives. Doctor, I wish I had more time. You are fantastic. I definitely will call on you again if you don't mind, but I really appreciate your time.
It was absolutely my pleasure. And again, we're going to get through this together.
Yes.
Please, everyone, continue the social distancing. Be responsible. Take care of your friends, your neighbors, your parents, because we all need to stick together during this time. And especially our kids are looking to us, and the older folks need the attention, the care, and the positivity that you're giving out.
Amen to that. Dr. Nasseri, thank you so much for your time, and we will talk to you again for sure on Wake Up Call.
Absolutely my pleasure.
Thank you. Take care. Dr. Sean Nasseri is a Mayo Clinic-trained ENT. The guy is Harvard-educated. As you just heard, he knows his stuff. So anyway, we'll get him back on Wake Up Call again because that was fantastic.